Let's do something a little bit different this week. I know that normally I'm going through every package installed on the Linux Slackware DVD, but this week I want to talk about, bizarrely, WordPress and Drupal, which I know that seems out of the blue, right? Well, I am involved with a blogging effort called sysadminsignal.com. That's what it's called. Sysadminsignal.com. It's a community blog site that has popped up very recently with a bunch of smart people who are sysadmins in their everyday lives or have been recently or not so recently in my case. And the point of the blog site is to teach people about systems administration and things around that. I mean, there's the scope of saying systems administration is already pretty broad, especially today, maybe more today than ever before, because you could be a sysadmin and maybe you're administering like actual bare metal servers that are serving things to the internet or to just your local business, or you could be a sysadmin of a data center where you're administering boxes that are also sort of, being used by other people or by other people who would call themselves sysadmins, or you could be maybe managing a cloud installation or a hybrid cloud, or even I think arguably you could probably call yourself a systems administration if you were actually managing like containers and pods running on someone else's cloud. So I think, I mean, there's a huge scope to this, and that's what the blog hopes to cover. And it just launched as of this recording on Monday, so that's like, I don't know, May 22nd or something like that, or 21st of 2023. And a lot of these people I knew from a previous blog, so this is like not exactly a new group of people. It's a group of people who have been writing together on blogs for probably a good 2 to 3 years already, and they're just kind of striking off on their own. They, meaning we're striking off on our own. It's been a great little effort, and it's been an interesting thing from a sort of an architectural standpoint, I guess, because the previous iteration of our home on the internet was a Drupal-based site. And when we decided to strike off on our own, we had a lot of discussions. We ended up on WordPress. And I want to talk about both the experience on Drupal. I want to talk about the discussions that we had towards possibly a static website, just sort of a front end to a Git repo, and then how we ended up on WordPress in the end. I think that whether or not you're a blogger yourself, I think it's kind of there's something interesting here just from a conceptual standpoint, because there are some interesting differences, I think, between Drupal and WordPress, as I have experienced them anyway. And I think that when you look at a platform, a lot of times you're looking broadly at computing. The difference between Drupal and WordPress is not so very different, I think, arguably, than the difference between, say, Linux and Mac, or Linux and Windows, or Mac and Windows, or whatever. You can take the concept of, well, here's the platform we're providing to people. And it could also be an application, right? It could be KdenLive to whatever exciting new video editing software is out there today, Adobe Premiere or whatever. I don't even know what's out there in the non-open source world anymore. Or the difference between, I don't know, Ardour and Pro Tools, or is Cakewalk still around? Probably not. Whatever all those applications are. You could look at the applications and say, well, what are we looking at here? What do we have a difference? Or even, it doesn't have to be, I don't mean to contrast it necessarily between open and closed. It could also be difference between Ardour and QTractor, difference between LibreOffice and Emacs. It could be a difference between, things that are sort of like alike in some ways, but just a different experience. And I think that's an interesting thing to look at because, one way or another, as a computerist, you're you're invested in user experience. Whether you care about it or not depends on who you are. Like whether it, by caring, I mean like whether that is a passion of yours, like you like to think about it or not. That depends on you. But either way, it is a thing that you have to worry about. Like when you hand someone a laptop, there's a user experience that you're handing over. And what are you handing over? And what do you want to hand over? These are questions that we have to ask ourselves as techie people. Now, before I start, I will say two things. One is that I'm drinking Bomber coffee from Flight. What's the name of this company that I always buy from? Flight Coffee, I think is what it's called. So Bomber Coffee, I think is the original one that I tried, I think, from this company. And so it says, this is the card, they have trading cards that they send with each of their coffee, which I absolutely love. Like this has sold me on this coffee company, aside from the fact that their coffee is really good. Yeah, Flight Coffee. Tastes like orange, caramel, and what's that say? Cocoa nib. I don't know what cacao nib is. I don't really like caramel, and I taste absolutely no hints of orange. But I mean, these things about the bouquet of the coffee or whatever, they never really land with me. I mean, it's like, yes, I get what you're trying to say, I guess. Let me take another sip of this thing to see if I can get some kind of a suggestion of like a citrus sort of note, I guess. Yeah, I guess I see what they're saying. It's got a sort of a latent brightness back there to it. Origins is Burundi, Colombia, Timor-Leste, and Brazil. Bomber, the original, the one and only. If you visited one of our customers across New Zealand, you'll most likely have tasted our firstborn. It all started back in 2009 when we sat around a campfire and talked about what we'd love to see in our dream blend, and that's what they've put together. So yeah, this is Bomber, and this is a good, I didn't actually realize this was kind of their first one, but it makes sense, because yeah, this is the first, I'm pretty sure this is the first one I ever had, and it is good. I don't know if I like it better than Milk Blend, which was another one that I had, but it is a good one. It's a very solid coffee. So if you ever are in New Zealand and you see a Flight Coffee store, go in, pick up some Bomber coffee. So that was an important thing to get out of the way, just so you know contextually how this episode is being recorded. The second thing I was going to say, which is actually a lot more apropos to the actual episode, is that I'm not trying to compare Drupal and WordPress in a sort of competition way. I'm not setting them up so that there is going to be a winner or a loser. There, I'm obviously going to be somewhat biased, I guess, because for me, there is a winner here. Like there's a definite, if you ask me what I'm going to choose next, I mean, I already know what I'm going to choose. Although to be fair, I knew that in advance. My feelings have not changed at all about Drupal and WordPress. I still have my preference as both an admin and a user of the platform, but I respect both. I really do. I think both are really cool projects. I think they're doing amazing work. Big fan. Not trying to pit them against each other, not trying to prove that one is better than the other. I do believe that they both have their use cases. So sure, let's talk about Drupal and WordPress in a friendly but biased way. So originally, the website that me and a bunch of my friends were blogging on was running on Drupal. This is, you know, as far back as like, what, 2019, I think, the website started. So for a good however many years, that is 4 years, this thing had been operating off of Drupal. Now, we were not managing the site ourselves. We were just writing for the site. The site itself was being managed and developed by a company, a different company than anything that we were a part of. And well, it was being managed by a company that we had a relationship with, but they were then outsourcing development to yet another company. So already you're seeing that there are lots of layers here that possibly could influence my experience with Drupal. That said, I've got experience with Drupal outside of a managed instance as well. So on the one hand, I am influenced by the fact that I didn't have direct control over the environment. But on the other hand, I've had that direct control over the environment before. And so I think I can kind of filter through both the conveniences and the inconveniences that lack of control most recently sort of inspired. So, or provided. So, Drupal, it has a lot, it's got a plugin structure, right? I mean, you install Drupal and you get the default looking install of Drupal. And to be honest, it is not the prettiest thing you've ever seen. It is a very basic, rudimentary kind of, basically, I guess, a blogging website, I guess, is what it sort of advertises itself as. Drupal, just like you might expect with something that's trying to give you a place on the internet where you can build a website. It has themes and it has plugins for different capabilities, for different functionality. There's a lot of customization that you can do to Drupal to make it right for whatever it is that you want to do. And I think that's a key phrase, that you can make Drupal right for whatever it is you want to do. And I think when you look at Drupal and you think, what do you want to do with Drupal? That is like a football stadium. You can do a lot with Drupal. By contrast, when you look at WordPress and you think, what is it you want to do? You're looking at, oh gosh, what's the opposite of a football field? A coffee shop, a nice little coffee shop. You go in, you know exactly what you're getting. Well, you don't know exactly what you're getting, right? You know you're gonna probably get some coffee. If you don't like coffee, maybe you'll grab a tea instead. If you don't like a tea, maybe they'll have a juice bar there as well. Maybe. Depends on what kind of coffee shop it is. Or at least they'll just have some juice on tap that you could get, or water. If you're hungry, maybe you'll get a bagel. Maybe. Maybe not. Maybe they don't have bagels. Well, maybe they have cabinet food. You can get a sandwich or something. Maybe not. Maybe they have just sweet treats like cakes and slices and things like that. Maybe you'll get those. So, yeah, you've still got a lot of variety. Like, I've covered a lot of ground. You just had either a drink, or a drink and lunch, or a drink and lunch and dessert, or just a drink and dessert, or whatever. Lots of options there, but it's within a narrow focus. Whereas Drupal, you look at it and it's a whole world of potential. There's a lot of things you can do in a whole big football stadium. You could have a concert, you could have a football match, you could have a festival, like a fair. You could set things up out on the field, like tents and things like that, have people wandering around. All kinds of things, right? And I don't know why I chose a football field. It just seemed like a big place to me, and but smaller than the whole world. So, there's a lot you could do in that big space. There's nobody really governing what you're going to make that space look like in the end, and you've got a lot of facility there to be able to transform it into something different. Maybe I shouldn't have said a football field. I'm starting to retract the I don't know why I would ever go to a sports analogy. That's so far out of my area of knowledge. Let's retract the football field analogy and just go like a big warehouse or something, because that you can do anything with too. You got like the skeleton, you got the bones of the warehouse itself, the what do they call them? Conference centers, I guess. You've got like this big empty space, and you can turn it into whatever you want. Like I say, a concert, a tech conference, a game conference, a haunted ex house experience, a big festival, a Renaissance festival, a gaming festival, a museum, all a virtual reality hybrid experience. You could do whatever you want to because it's just a big empty space. But again, there's the structure around it. There's the facilities. You've got, your place for catering, and you've got your places. You've got water fountains and restrooms and all the things that you would need to gather a bunch of people and keep them happy for a day or a weekend, but very little else. You've got all potential without really any guidance. Whereas WordPress, like I say, you've got a lot of potential, but there's already furniture in the house. There's already things there that you're expected to kind of utilize as you build your custom experience. Probably enough analogizing up front, but yeah, let's talk a couple of specifics. And I think there are two specifics. I should probably be taking notes to keep myself on track. There are two specifics that I want to talk about. One is probably, in a way, the really, really obvious, which is the text editor. Why is that obvious? Because no matter what kind of experience you're building with your little website, someone's using a text editor, whether it's the developers of the site to create pages of content and so on. Or maybe it's your users. Maybe you actually want people to come in and submit content and that sort of thing. So there's the matter of text editing. That's important. And then there's the plugins themselves, because again, the plugins, that's the stuff that's the stuff that provides the functionality, and that those are important, and we'll talk about those as well. So I guess maybe let's talk about the plugins first, although the thing top of mind is actually the text editors, but I feel like the plugins probably structurally makes more sense to address first. I mean, plugins literally provide the functions of the website that you're building. So in Drupal, a lot of the plugins are interestingly very developer focused. And I know I'm probably misrepresenting things here. I'm painting with very broad strokes, and someone out there who absolutely loves and uses Drupal and really gets it is probably yelling at me right now through their speaker. And I can't hear that for the record. And I do apologize if you're the person, and I am blatantly just simplifying and misrepresenting Drupal based on a very narrow, limited view that I happen to have of it. I do apologize. I am, again, not trying to pit Drupal versus WordPress here. I am trying to give, I guess, in broad strokes, sort of a potential view of a difference between Drupal and WordPress. And I've noticed that in Drupal, a lot of the plugins, like as you navigate through all of the, first of all, they're called modules technically. So as you look through the modules of Drupal, then you find that a lot of them are developer focused. They're functions that I think the expectation probably is for a developer to then use in order to provide a new functionality within the website for their users. So you get things like CK editor certainly is the primary text editor, so that's an important one. Views PHP. This module allows the admin account user to add fields, filters, and sorts to views which use PHP code. So that's very obviously developer focused. Geolocation field. A geolocation field defines a new field type to store geographical locations as pairs of latitude and longitude. Strong arm gives site builders a way to override the default variable values that Drupal core and contributed modules ship with. It is not an end user tool. It says that. Voting API. Voting API helps developers who want to use a standardized API and schema for storing, retrieving, and tabulating votes for Drupal content, and so on. Compare that to some of the WordPress results when you go to WordPress.org/plugins. Things like, Gutenberg, that's one of the text editors, I think. That might be the primary text editor. Enable two-factor authentication. That's kind of developer-focused, but the intent is that you install that plugin and then your WordPress site has two-factor authentication. Like, that's it. It's not adding a library so that developers can develop an API for two-factor. It is the two-factor authentication plugin. You add that and then it your site has 2FA. PodPress. Add that plugin and you can now host, you can now enter your data, your content, and end up with a podcast. So your RSS feed is designed to reference, you know, the media associated with that post, essentially. Author avatars list block displays list of user avatars using widgets or shortcodes. That seems, again, maybe like it would be developer, but it's not actually. You install that, and then you have a grid display of all of the different authors contributing to your site. That sort of thing. There's another one that I don't even remember the name of it off the top of my head. Sort of a social media style front end user page, social media thing. So each user who has contributed to your site, who has an account on your site, has a user page with information about them, like what school they're going to, what kind of stuff they do for their job, what programming languages they're into, or what TV shows they're into, whatever. And then they can follow each other, and it kind of adds like this sort of layer of sort of social media / MySpace aspect of it. And yes, I was actually referring to MySpace. So and again, That's a plugin. You don't, it's not a plugin that adds the fields and variables to enable a developer to create a social media experience. It is the social media experience. It is done. That you install that plugin and then you have user pages for all of your users and you're finished. Now you can go in, you can adjust things, you can change settings, but it's already done for you. I'm not trying to imply that no Drupal module is ready to launch outside of the right out of the box or out of the gate. There are Drupal plugins that you install and then you email your users and say, okay, the new module has been installed. You can find it here in the Drupal interface and have fun using it. You know, you're done. But a lot of them is what I'm saying. A lot of Drupal modules seem to be, in my experience, things to help the developers develop the website, whereas WordPress seems to be things to help the users build a web experience. Let's say it like that. And there's a difference there. That's an important difference. Now, in my very specific experience, Drupal has been very reliant upon active development, like ongoing maintenance. Now, this is somewhat unique to the situation that I was most recently using Drupal within. I was very much on a, let's just call it like a multi-user Drupal setup, you know, like it's a big install of Drupal with lots of people using it, lots of different user roles. It was very much like, I don't know, I imagine, I actually don't know. I was gonna say like maybe like SharePoint or something, but I don't actually know what SharePoint is. So that's probably not an appropriate comparison, but it's almost groupware, you know, like it's a big thing with a big community of users to a centralized sort of core team of developers. And if you wanted something like WebP support, for instance, I want to upload WebP instead of a JPEG or PNG. Smaller file sizes, quicker loading times, it just makes sense. Well, on the Drupal instance that I happened to be using, that request, technically speaking, was a four-year request because I didn't have that functionality for 4 years on the website. In fact, the website was discontinued before I got that. In other words, I never got that functionality. It wasn't a thing that we could do. We could not upload WebP images because the developer time just never came up to make that possible. Now, there is a WebP module, so in theory, you should be able to import that and that should support WebP. Like, it shouldn't be that big of a deal, and maybe the four-year lag time was exclusively specific to the instance that I was on. I haven't installed Drupal and then installed that WebP module just to see whether that would work. It could have been just a question of, you know, well, in order to support a new format, we have to go through the security team, and then once we get sign off from them, that'll be good, and then we have to go through the legal team, get sign off from them, and so on. It could have been just a bunch of red tape that Drupal having that capability or not wouldn't, you know, didn't matter. Like, it's just the problem was that you know, external of Drupal. So that could have very well been the problem. But the user experience was, hey, I want WebP functionality. When can I get that? 4 years later, you still don't have it. Whereas on WordPress, at least it's self-managed WordPress. I mean, not self-managed, but I know the guy running the site. So basically self-managed WordPress. I want WebP support. And well, actually it was already there. But if I'd wanted it, it would have been a matter of installing that plugin. So that's not a fair comparison, but I think that the experience is, it's indicative of something. And that is that Drupal, it is much less concerned, from in my experience, the modules are much less concerned with sort of, I'm going to provide you with the experience versus I'm going to provide you with the capability. The capability means that it's technically true. There might not be a field for it yet. There might not be Once you use that module, once you've installed the module, you technically have the capability. You just now need someone to develop how that's going to translate for users. Whereas with WordPress, in my experience, it's been user focused. Like, you want something installed, you install it. And not only do you get the capability, you get what that translates to on your website. Now, again, I'm being a little bit hyperbolic. I'm making a lot of general statements here about Drupal, and I do believe that it's true. I do believe that what I'm saying is true about Drupal. I think that the focus in Drupal is on enabling developers to create a website, almost to the degree that Drupal is more akin to Django or Flask, something like that, than it is to WordPress. And that, again, that's such a wrong statement, because it's Drupal is obvious. I mean, you install it, you have a blog, it's ready to go. Like, it's not Django, it's not Flask. But I'm just saying, it's a framework. Drupal is a framework, and I don't even know that the people at Drupal would necessarily argue with that. I think they might argue, well, WordPress is also a framework, which would be a fair argument. But I in my mind, Drupal is more a framework than a site that's, you know, than a site builder even. It's a framework. Same words, right? Framework, site builder. Like, what's the difference? Well, the difference is who would know what that means. Developers would know what a framework means. Users wouldn't know what that means. Users would know, oh, it's a site builder. Cool, I can go there to build my site. So Drupal is a framework, I think, in my mind. Now, having said that, yes, I am being hyperbolic. You can, for instance, go to the modules in Drupal. You can find the podcast module. Module, and you can set that up to be to create a podcast RSS feed that associates the thing that you upload to your node, to that specific node, the article or the blog post, can serve media, that sort of thing. So it's possible to have like prêt-à-porter, ready to wear sort of modules in Drupal. I'm not saying it doesn't exist. I'm just saying that I think it exists more often in WordPress than it does in Drupal. Happy to be proved wrong, but in my experience, Drupal just doesn't focus on that. It focuses on the tools that someone will need to build a certain thing. I think I've probably belabored that point enough by now. I do feel bad. I feel like I'm misrepresenting everyone. This is a horrible topic, but I don't know why I chose it. But I mean, I think it's fascinating too, because like I say, I'm not trying to put a schism between Drupal and WordPress, or to compare one or the other as if though one is bad, one is good. Because WordPress, as I've said, it's got a bunch of plugins that are basically ready to go. You install it and suddenly your site is different. It has all the functionality that you think that you want. And now, so you sit down and you think to yourself, oh, this is perfect. This is everything I ever wanted. Oh, except that one thing, that one little adjustment that I would want to make just to make it perfect for myself. You know, I don't have to do it, but it would be nice. So you go into WordPress, you go into the options. The option that you want doesn't seem to be listed as something that you can customize. Oh, that's weird. Okay, well, maybe you're in the wrong place. You go out to WordPress a little bit further out and you go into the general site settings. Maybe it's in there. No, you don't have access to that either. That's strange. Okay. Well, how would I change that one little element? Maybe there's a plugin that can change that element introduced by a plugin. And maybe there is, who knows? Or maybe there is, but it doesn't recognize that plugin's element that you want to change. Or it does, but it recognizes it as a secondary thing. A really basic example of this, for instance, would be a footer. A website footer, the thing at the foot of the page, the thing at the bottom of the page. You want to edit that in WordPress? Well, you'd better make sure that you've chosen a theme that gives you access to its footer, because not all of them do. That seems weird. Some of them do if you pay. The theme is free, but to edit the footer, you have to pay extra for that feature. That seems odd, but that's a business model, and it's fair, you know? Like, if you don't pay, then you're gonna have, for instance, a theme designed by, you know, random person at random company in your footer, whether you want it or not. Now, maybe you want that, but you also want to add a Creative Commons icon so people know that the site is all the content on the site is Creative Commons. Well, can't do that. You don't have access to the footer. So it's not that you want to remove something. You just want to add something to it. Well, it can't do that. Now, there are footer scripts that you can write so that you can sort of add to the existing footer. So because there's not, in WordPress, they don't consider footer being a singular entity. You can have many footers. So you got the footer that comes with your theme, and then you could add more content to the actual footer. So basically, the footer is anything before the body tag, but I guess under the footer tag, technically. I don't know the HTML. I can't picture it in my head, but what they refer to as a footer is, yeah, whatever comes with your theme, and then also whatever you add, you append to the page, which comes after the theme footer. So you can do it, but now you got two footers, which is fine, except it doesn't quite mesh. I mean, you can make it visually look the same. You give them both the same background color, and you're fine. It's basically one thing. There's maybe a little awkward space, like too much separation that you can't quite squash down because, again, you don't have access to the theme footer. But, I mean, you do have a footer there. So there are workarounds, and that's a word you use a lot when you're using WordPress. Workaround. I found a workaround. Oh, I found a workaround. You're to say that a lot with WordPress. You may never really have to say that. No, I wouldn't say never. You will rarely have to say that with Drupal, at least a well-supported Drupal, because someone can design the thing that you want, maybe, if you have someone to do that for you. With WordPress, you will be doing a lot of workarounds. You will find different ways of doing something, either with the site design or even in your, as you edit a post, you're going to think, I really just want that picture next to that picture, or this table next to that table. And good luck trying to get that to work in WordPress. Can you do it? Yeah, sure. Eventually you'll be able to do it. Will you settle for a workaround instead because you're tired of trying to do a simple task for 2 hours? Yeah, you'll settle for something different. Or you'll install a plugin that will make it possible. Either way, though, it's not going to be as direct as you think. It's going to feel like a workaround. Again, that might be fine, but it is a thing that will happen because WordPress, the plugins that you install with WordPress, typically they expect you to just be happy with what they provide, because that's the point. They're providing you everything that you need so you can just get started with the thing that you're actually trying to do. Whereas Drupal is providing you many times a code library that you could use to then develop the thing that you want to use for the thing that you're trying to actually do. It's a different structure, different sort of model of building a thing. It's time for coffee. You know what I'm drinking. Go get your own. Come back. Finish up the show. Before I get into the other element about this, like the text editor is the thing that I'm thinking of, I do kind of want to talk a little bit about, well, why use either Drupal or WordPress? Like, wouldn't you just, what if you just used a Git repository and published everything to a blog like Hugo or Jekyll, a static site generator? Well, I mean, for the record, that would be my preferred workflow. And I've done this before with multiple users. Like it is 100% possible. And I think that it works really, really well. I think there's resistance to that idea because it's not familiar. It isn't WordPress. But it's actually an entirely possible workflow. And I use it actively on a site called Mixed Signals, mixedsignals.ml. ML, that's Mike Lima, mixedsignals.mikelima. And this is a site that it's not a tech site. It is a game hobby site. And it uses a thing called Grav, which you can take a look at some point if you want. Gitgrav.org. It's an open source static site, flat file CMS. And you install Grav, and it uses a bunch of PHP stuff to index the markdown files that you create, and it builds just the HTML pages to serve that content out to the world. And it has a bunch of sort of front end things like a menu structure and themes that you can install with little thumbnails so that you can give the site sort of a way to, you know, see all the different blog posts that have been posted and so on. So I use Grav to build mixedsignals.ml, and I have historically had more than one person posting to that site. Nowadays it is actually just me, but I've had other people posting, and it worked fine. It was fine. If people would basically just, they would use their own local Git repository, and when they were happy with the article that they've created, they would push their main branch to the website, to the server hosting this Git Grav instance. It would do a fast forward merge so that their content that they've just created gets integrated into the main branch. And then a Git hook on the server takes whatever just got committed and copies it over to another repository, a bare repository there on the same server. That's the bare repository. So then it would copy that to a quote unquote local Git repository there on the server with all the markdown files, and Grav is monitoring that site, that repository as its source, and it rebuilds the site or does whatever it needs to do to get that the new content listed on the main page. It works perfectly. Now, with lots and lots of other contributors, you run into the problem of, well, who's merging into that main branch, that bare repository on the server? Who gets to merge into the main branch? And how exactly do you do that without clobbering other people's work and so on? And so there you do. You don't, you know, you have to have an editorial team essentially that says, okay, I've got permission to push something, to approve it and to push it to the main branch. And if anything breaks, then it's on me to fix it. I don't think that much would break, but you never know, because someone might be doing a revision of an article, and then how does that get handled? Or someone, you know, you might have to remove an article. Like, there are lots of things that could happen that could really start to get confusing within Git, and there's going to be cherry-picking commits, and there are going to be, or cherry-picked merges, and there are going to be conflicts that you'd have to feel comfortable about resolving conflicts in a merge request or a merge action. So it does get a little bit complex. And once you start getting into that sort of complexity, then you start to realize, well, there's something specialized happening here. And today, and for the next foreseeable year, we have one or two or three people who feel confident in their ability to use Git and to resolve those merge conflicts when they come up, and to just kind of manage any kind of Git rebasing or whatever you have to do to make that main branch remain sort of pure, as it were. But what happens when those people go away? Who's left? Are we going to have someone who's that comfortable with Git for the rest of the website's life? And I think that's the main fear when you talk to someone about, well, let's just do this as a flat file CMS. I think whether they know it or not, that's the fear. Like, you might not even know enough about Git to know that those are your fears, but you know you know that something's wrong. And I think that's what it is. It's the, well, who's going to curate the main branch of the centralized Git repository? Git is decentralized, of course. But in a way, you're saying that the authoritative Git repository is that bare repository on the server with the Git hooks to copy things over to the local copy of it so that that can be served up essentially as your web root. I mean, it's not technically, but I mean, that's the place where that's where Grav is getting all of the content for. So it needs to be impeccable. And Grav isn't a perfect tool by any means. I'm actually kind of thinking of moving away from it because it's got some weird things that they do that I just can't get them to stray away from. And it kind of drives me crazy sometimes. It really does. If I get something wrong in the YAML markup at the head of an article, it'll break and it'll expose the home directory of the home directory path of my entire install. Is that a great idea? No, not really. That's not something that I really want to broadcast. And I cannot get the Grav authors to agree that that kind of error message is dangerous, not useful, but also dangerous. So there are some quirks to Grav that I have kind of been thinking about migrating away from, but at the same time, it's just me right now writing just random blog posts about my real life hobbies. So I'm not too bothered about it, but I think a Git infrastructure is possible, but it's not what you think it is. Maybe, unless you have real experience with managing Git with lots of commits happening, it can be problematic. Because I think in your head, you just think, well, that's fine. It'll be easy. I'll just have people make a clone of the Git repository, and then they'll make their changes, and then they'll just commit it upstream. They'll just do a merge request, and we'll just merge their changes, and that'll be that. Well, sure, but that becomes a lot more complex when you have five people trying to merge into the main branch, or you have five people trying to merge new content, and three people trying to revise content, and one person trying to delete a fake article that they shouldn't have committed in the first place, or whatever. Or you have someone breaking a build, or you have someone, you have five requests to merge, and now you have to sort through all of the different conflicts. It becomes a lot bigger of a deal than you think it seems like it should be. You'll run tests on your own, and it's easy, it's fine, it works. You'll even run tests with like two people. Again, fine. Perfect. No, it just so happens that during all your tests, there aren't any conflicts and everything goes beautifully. Then you open it up to a bunch of people and things start to get pretty complex pretty quickly. So for that reason, I think we ended up the sysadminsignal.com site ended up on WordPress because WordPress is just so easy to install and it is just so ready for use immediately. I mean, you install WordPress and you're off. You're going. You're off and running. You can make users really simply. You can give different roles to users. Everything just it just unfolds so perfectly throughout. Everything's just ready to go. Like, it's just so easy. I can't describe how easy it is. I think in a way I'd forgotten how easy it was because of the 4 years on Drupal that I'd spent, and I just kind of thought, well, WordPress is just the other option, right? And there's still going to be a lot of setup, and I mean there was setup, but it was just so immediate, so quickly. It just from zero to a site in no time. It's amazing. And the interface is pretty intuitive. I mean, it's an interface. People need to learn it. People have to click around, get familiar with what all the different options are, where different functions are actually located, and so on. But on a day-to-day basis, most people using WordPress on a day-to-day basis, they're writing content. That's what WordPress is. It is a blogging platform. And like I say, unlike Drupal, which is a web development framework, practically, WordPress is not that. It is a website builder. It is a blogging platform specifically. Yes, you can abuse it to do things that are not just blogging. You can do podcasting. You can do sort of a social media type thing or a social networking, whatever it's called. You can do lots of different things with it, but at its core, it really wants to be a blogging website. Or if we really sort of look at blogging broadly, then we could just say it wants to be a content delivery platform. That's what it does really, really well. Now, conveniently, a lot of the internet, it wants to be a content delivery platform. Like, that's what most of the internet is. It's a bunch of content on the internet. on the www that you want to go to. You want to go to the World Wide Web. You want to read about a thing. Maybe you want other things. Maybe you want podcasts, video, I don't know, whatever. But that's all basically within. I mean, you know, if you look at it broadly enough, that's all just blogging, essentially. So WordPress is really well suited for the internet, for the World Wide Web. And that's what it does. That's what it gears itself towards. And the core of the content creation experience is that screen where you go in WordPress and you click posts, new post, and you're creating a new post. And now there are differences between posts and pages in WordPress. Pages are kind of like the global web pages of your site. They're the ones that are kind of there. They don't get updated. They're not integrated into your RSS feed, for instance. So if someone subscribes to your site, they're not going to get the about page or the, press kit page. You know, those are pages. Posts are the things that you want to send out regularly. These are the new things that happen on a daily or a weekly basis on your website. There's new posts all the time. Pages you created once way back when you installed the site and you forget about them. So posts. I mean, they manifest as web pages, but they're not called pages in the WordPress interface. They're posts. So you go to create a new post, and now you're typing in stuff. You need to type in the headline. You need to type in a paragraph, things like that. You want to add an image, a table, a code block to demonstrate how to do something in code. Whatever it is, that's the most of your experience, most of your time in WordPress is spent doing that. And it's quite an interesting experience in WordPress. It is different than what you're used to. I can just say that sort of as a blanket statement. It is not what you expect. Because if you go to, linuxquestions.org and you make a post there, then you're presented with probably CK Editor, a little open source. It might not be. It might be Tiny MCE or whatever, but maybe it's CK Editor or something like that. It's a text field, a big text field where you type in text, and there's some rudimentary formatting options, or you can use select HTML tags, and it'll figure it out, or maybe it'll have special tags in square brackets instead of angle brackets, and that'll get translated eventually into HTML, whatever. In Drupal, it's not like that. WordPress. WordPress is not like that. WordPress has defined blocks. It sees everything. All your content is a block. And when you enter a heading, then that whole sort of row, if you will, of your page is a heading now. And I mean, that's how HTML works, by the way. I mean, that's a normal thing. It's just you're not probably used to it in a visual editor. So now you've got a heading, and your next line will be a paragraph, probably. And so you'll type in some text there, and it detects that you're just typing in a paragraph, no problem. The next thing is going to be maybe a subheading. So instead of an H1, it's now going to be an H2. It'll be a little section, a new section of your post. And so you set that to H2. And so again, across the entire page, now that counts as an H2, which again, that's normal. That's how HTML works. These are block level elements. You want to add an image? Great. You click the little button to define what block you're doing. You select image, and now you can open up an image either from your media library that you've uploaded an image to, or from a URL on the internet, or if you haven't uploaded your image yet, you can upload it first and then select it from the media library. You can give it alt tags and things like that. It's all there, and it's all block level. WordPress essentially encourages you to write everything as a stack. If you think of like the game Jenga or Tetris, and then imagine each piece, actually Jenga is a better example. Each piece is a paragraph or an H2 or an H1 way up at the top or an H3 or an image. They go all the way across the page, but they don't sort of intermingle. They don't go side by side. You don't do an image with fancy text wrap around the image. You do text, and then a big old image, and then more text, and then a big old image, and then a big old subheading, and so on. And the advantage to that design, to that theory, is that no matter what kind of device you're viewing the thing on, whether it's a mobile device or a desktop in Firefox's whatever it is, reader mode, toggle reader view, a great view. I love that view in Firefox. Whatever you're looking at it on, it all just flows because it was all structured as a stack of elements. And it doesn't matter how long that element is on a certain screen, you're going to be in that element until you reach the end of the element, and then there's going to be the next element. And that way you don't get weird things like one letter per line as an image next to it that was supposed to have an image wrap around it battles the text for space on a tiny, tiny screen. Or you don't get all this huge image that you have to sort of scroll to the right in order to find the text that's wrapping around it on the right-hand side, or whatever the problem might be. So WordPress's text editor is very strict, clunky, draconian. Some people hate this editor because they think that it doesn't give them the flexibility that they want to have. And this is one of those times where really generally the correct response is that's because you're not supposed to have that flexibility. And that's a painful thing to say to anybody because everybody wants flexibility. They have in their head, possibly, exactly what they want, what makes sense to them. Well, I want a thumbnail image of the actor in my favorite TV show, and then I want to have a paragraph about that actor and why I like them over on the right-hand side. And then on the next line, I want to have a thumbnail image and a paragraph. Like, why can't I do that easily? Is there a plugin for that? Well, probably, and there's probably a way to do that in WordPress as well. I wouldn't want to resort to tables, but that does come immediately to mind. But I think there's a column block style. So you can do it. It's just, you know, like that kind of flexibility is dangerous because it's like, well, yes, I see the logic there. I see how that layout makes sense on your specific screen as you're reading it in a very specific way. Yes, absolutely, 100% that makes sense. Heck, go to wordpress.org/plugins and you'll see exactly that layout, right? You'll see the icon of the plugin, a description of the plugin on the right. Icon of the plugin, description on the right. Like, obviously, we're used to that sort of layout. And yet, in real life implementation, with people looking at things on who knows what kind of device, that kind of layout is suboptimal. Look at the plugin page on a mobile view, and it's not as good as on the desktop view. It's not the worst. It's actually pretty good. But I mean, you know, the flexibility can be dangerous if you're targeting as many people as you possibly can target that you want to have convenient viewership of your content. And so WordPress tries to remove a lot of that. Is Drupal any better? Well, technically, maybe, arguably, not really. So Drupal uses the CK editor. It does use the CK editor, and CK edit is fine, I guess. It's weird. CK editor is a big text field, and I think it usually defaults to a WYSIWYG setup. So what you see in CK editor is what you'll see once you publish the page, once it is then rendered into HTML. And it gives you a lot of selections for different, you know, HTML elements that you want to use, the bold and the maybe a mono font for code and so on. But if you're an HTML person, then you might switch views in your CK editor over to the HTML view. Now here's where it gets weird. What CK editor does dynamically, when you click view source, it takes everything in the WYSIWYG and converts it to HTML. You write your HTML, and then when you click, you know, no longer view source, you want to get back to the WYSIWYG, it takes your HTML and converts it into the WYSIWYG view. I'm saying converts, transforms. It transforms it. So if in WYSIWYG, for instance, you have ampersand AMP semicolon, then when you transform that to HTML, then it'll keep ampersand AMP semicolon. Perfect. That's great. Now you transform that HTML back to what you see is what you get, and it picks up that ampersand AMP semicolon and transforms it from HTML to text, which of course renders the literal just the ampersand sign. And that'll go for anything. You know, it'll go for ampersand hash 91 semicolon and ampersand hash 93 semicolon, which of course, square bracket. It gets really weird when you do something like an angle bracket though. So if you do like an ampersand LT semicolon, which is the less than symbol, and I know that I'm swapping between ASCII I mean, HTML entities and XML entities, but some are easier for me to remember as one and others are easier for me to remember as the other. So you got ampersand LT semicolon, that's the less than symbol, angle bracket, and ampersand GT semicolon, that's the greater than symbol. So now if you've got those entered, especially, for instance, if you're writing a blog post about HTML, then you would want to preserve the sort of sanctity of your HTML element, because things can get confusing if you don't, and indeed they do. So I've more times than I can count in Drupal, I have had code blocks and things like that with angle brackets in them, and through the transformation of what you see is what you get and the source code editor, you get all kinds of weird things where suddenly it starts interpreting your example HTML code as valid HTML to be transformed from one thing to another. And so you start getting HTML renders of the stuff that you meant to describe to people, and things get really, really messed up in some really, really bad ways, because once the HTML becomes integrated into the post's HTML source code, then things start to break at weird places and you can't figure out where the problem started. And generally the solution has been to just delete everything and repaste it in from your text editor as source code and then hope for the best. So it can get really, really pretty bad in Drupal, in specifically CK editor. Now they have other editor modules you can install into Drupal. Again, this is a framework, right? So you can build out a new backend for your users, but the default experience is based around CK Editor, and it is not the best experience if you're the kind of person who wants to go in and meddle with the HTML source code to get exactly what you want, which would be, in the context of this conversation, that would be the advantage of Drupal. Well, you can switch over to source view mode and change things, whereas in WordPress, you can't do that. There's probably a module for it and or a plugin in WordPress for it, but by default, you can't do that. You get this text editor that shows you exactly what it thinks you want. It forces you to stay within that block element framework, and that's that. Whereas Drupal, yes, you have the flexibility, but now with that added power becomes this added responsibility of, hey, you'd better try to trick Drupal or CK Editor into not munging your HTML entities or your XML entities when you switch back over to your source code view or from your source code view to your WYSIWYG view. And it becomes a whole new problem. Half a dozen of one, six of the other. I mean, really, like never was there a better example of exactly, you know, you've got the flexibility, but it's going to break more often than not. You don't have the flexibility, you're going to have to find workarounds more often than not, let's say. Like, you're just going to have to settle for something. I really, really prefer the WordPress method in this context. Normally, I would, you know, normally, no, absolutely not. I don't want to find workarounds. I want to adjust the exact thing that I want to adjust, and I want to have that be the new source of truth. The problem, I think, for me with Drupal is that's not what happens. You can adjust what you want, but then something else is going to come back and adjust it again for you, whether you want it to or not, and it's sometimes impossible, seemingly, to tell it to leave that thing alone. So WordPress is the winner in pretty much every aspect for me. WordPress. It's WordPress. 100% WordPress. Like, if I ever use Drupal again, personally, it'll be too soon. Like, it's just Drupal is not what I'm looking for in a website builder. Were I a PHP developer, maybe I would feel differently about Drupal. Maybe that would be exactly what I wanted, because it's giving me all the tools to make it possible for me to make the right site. Like, the site, the way that it's supposed to work. WordPress knows how it wants to work, and that's how it works. The plugins that it provides you adds just onto that model. It doesn't, it rarely betrays that model. It's all sort of the same idea. Like, here's a thing that I've designed. You can install it on your website if you'd like. I'll give you some access to some things if you're a programmer or you want to get in there and change things around, but generally speaking, this is the box. You can just layer it into your Jenga tower and start using it. You start fiddling around with it, though, the tower's going to probably fall down. Like I say, normally in like real life, in my computing life, I'm 100% in this comparison. I'm Drupal. I'm the one who wants to fiddle with things. But in the context of I'm here on this website because I want to write content and publish it, 100% WordPress. It just makes everything so easy. It's really, really beautiful. Like really, really nice. I was shocked by how easy WordPress was making the process of making a website easy and pleasant. WordPress just absolutely amazing. And frankly, even the things that you want to change in WordPress, like I don't find them that difficult, you know, if you're not afraid to get into the PHP side of things. There's a right way and a wrong way. You need to go into your theme and make a child theme, which I've done before. It's not that hard. I mean, it's new, it's different. You have to learn it. You have to, you know, you have to kind of keep things straight, but it isn't hard. You can do a child theme and then develop on top of that your new feature. Make your changes, whatever. It's not that difficult. Again, it might not be enough for a dyed-in-the-wool PHP developer who wants to just, they have very specific goals in mind. But for, I think, most people, most users, WordPress is exactly what they're looking for when they say, I want to have something on the internet. So in terms of broader experience, I think that this is an interesting study because you have three options: Git, Drupal, and WordPress. And that's basically the level of difficulty. Git is a very specific set of skills and a knowledge set. Drupal, same thing, but maybe less specific, because I feel like there are probably more PHP developers than there are people who really understand how Git works. And then WordPress, completely opposite end of the spectrum in a way where it's really user focused. And the payoffs are exactly what the cliche would say they were, you know, like with WordPress, you get this great open source platform that happens to not be very flexible in many ways. Whereas with Drupal, you get a great open source platform that is very, very flexible. One's not right and one's not wrong. It's just a question of the end product. How hard do you want to work for that end product? And how important is it that the end product reflects exactly what you had envisioned in your head versus what you're happy to settle for? And I mean, that makes WordPress sound really bad, right? Oh, you have to settle for it. But again, in reality, it's kind of a beautiful thing. And I guess in a weird way, a good analogy for this would be KDE and GNOME. And again, this is a horrible analogy. Apologies to everyone for making it. But I mean, it does kind of work. Like if we think of KDE as Drupal, or maybe we could go farther out than KDE. Maybe we could go to like i3 or Awesome or Fluxbox or whatever, you know, like some, or maybe more like OpenBox, where there's a lot of configuration that you have to do. They're giving you the tools and maybe a very bare bone sort of implementation, but for you to get it to be what you want, then you have to write the code. You have to write the configuration files. Whereas GNOME, for instance, it's almost painful to customize GNOME. I don't know if you've tried GNOME lately. If you're a Slackware user, you may not have, but I run GNOME on my work laptop, and I mean, there are lots of plugins, like little, they're GNOME shell plugins, and they've got a great system for implementing them. You can go to the website for GNOME shell plugins and look through them, and you just click a little switch on the, you know, on the internet, and it installs that plugin on your desktop, and it detects that next time you go to that site that you have that installed. There's an integration thing. It's really impressive. It's great. It's really neat. And the plugins are horrible. I mean, they're great. They're dangerous. Like, some of them don't work as advertised. Some of them are no longer maintained, but they do exactly what you want them to do. But GNOME has changed too much, and so when you least expect it, it doesn't work, or doesn't work at all from the get-go, or this one plugin has everything that you want except that one feature, and then there's this other plugin that has that one feature plus a bunch of other stuff that you don't want. It's just horrible. It's a horrible experience. Running GNOME out of the box is a better experience just so you can avoid installing the shell plugins. I'm being a little bit hyperbolic. I am running like a clipboard manager for GNOME, but my partner is running a GNOME thing to provide desktop icons, and it doesn't do really what she wants. I mean, like, plug it into an external monitor and the icons like change around or go to the wrong monitor or something like that. You know, it's just, it's painful. It is really actually a little bit painful to try to get GNOME to bend to your will. And so you end up settling for just GNOME, like whatever they give you. Maybe you can install GNOME tweaks. That'll get you like some options, some more options, but that are relatively safe. But that's really as far as you should dare go. But the flip side of that is that you get GNOME, and it's a beautiful desktop. It's really nice. Like, it's beautiful. It's smooth. It does lots of cool things. It's great. It's nice. It's fine. It's a beautiful desktop. If I show that to people, they are impressed. People like Linux because of GNOME. If I show people my weird setup for KDE, and certainly if I were to show them Fluxbox or something, then they're not going to like Linux. Suddenly it's just not interesting. It's a computer, like, they kind of like what they have at work, or it's a computer that's so far beyond anything that they could ever recognize as a computer that they're just not even interested. I think one could expect similar reactions if you were to show someone your Git Grav and Git and Git custom Git hook based publishing workflow. They would look at that and they would just think, well, that isn't a blog. That's not a front end for a blog. I see that the end result looks like a blogging website, but that's not a blog site. Like, where's the admin panel? Well, it's right here in these configuration files. It's just ridiculous. Like, that's not a blogging website for people. Drupal, they might recognize as a big official sort of blogging interface, but it'll be painful to use. WordPress will be great to use, but not super flexible. It's a spectrum. It's what you want. Personally, for whatever bizarre reason, I am solidly in the Git and the WordPress camps, and I'll skip over the Drupal side. Maybe because I'm not a PHP developer. Or maybe it's because Drupal, you know, when they give you the flexibility, they also take it away from you because of that really, really weird CK editor behavior. That it could boil down to that for all I know. But for now, at least, yeah, it's either Git and Git hooks and a flat file CMS, or WordPress, the opposite end of the spectrum. Drupal, I'll personally skip. But those are the use cases. Those are the use cases for blogging. Front ends, Git, Drupal, WordPress. It's been my experience. It's been 4 years of experience with this. WordPress a lot longer. I mean, I've used WordPress off and on for ages. But certainly, yeah, Drupal and WordPress, fascinating comparisons, fascinating projects. Open source, I think they're doing great. And now hopefully this has given you some context in case you're trying to decide between the two, or if you're ever presented with the opportunity to choose one or the other. They're not equal. They're not the same. They're different. They're very, very different. And hey, if you're interested in reading about systems administration or writing about systems administration, check out sysadminsignal.com. It is a blogging website. I don't know that we have a workflow yet for actually submitting articles. No, there is. What am I talking about? There totally is. Community join. No, this is none of this is what I'm looking for. Anyway, there is a method to submit articles to this website, and it is to email sysadmin.signal@gmail.com. Needless to say, I'm not in charge of that email address, nor am I in charge of the fact that they communicate via Discord, a closed source chat application that certainly maybe would have been better as a Matrix instance. But anyway, I'm just writing for the site. If you want to write for them or read about the articles that we write, then go to sysadminsignal.com. It's a community website with zero support from any external entity. We are going to just write about whatever we want about systems administration of all kinds. Check it out. Thanks for listening. I'll talk to you next time.